Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week we're talking about the fundamental difference between an e-commerce site selling own brand products and one selling other people's products, because that's a fundamental difference and you need to act and change the website accordingly. So let's get started. Hi Ian, how are you?
Hello, Mark. Good to hear from you. How are you doing?
I'm all right, yeah. Apologies to all the listeners who are kind of hear car noises and sound and wind. It's because I'm walking. I've got to get out of the house. I've got to do some more exercise. So I thought I'd do it whilst walking. But anyway, today, what we thought we would talk about was the difference, the fundamental difference between an e-commerce site where you're selling your own product versus selling someone else's product, because it's quite there's quite a difference in the marketing channel and the marketing methodology with which you would do that. And I think that's a fundamental idea for people to get their head around in order to make it work. So it's quite a good subject to kind of lead with, I think.
I think it's a big one. It's a big one because it's part of the fundamental, you know, strategy before you start thinking about anything else. Is are you selling your own products or your own branded product, or are you selling other people's brands? Yeah, because the strategy is completely different. Now, obviously, you can have certain scenarios where you're selling a bit of both. But yeah, most people tend to fall into one or two camps. So it's my own brand I've created, I've sourced it, I've put my own brand on it, or I'm selling other people's ones. And it's something that keeps coming up quite a lot in the strategy programs we're doing. So, I mean, I just thought it would be good to talk about, really, just from my own perspective, just to clarify our thoughts around it.
And I think a lot of the confusion comes from when people go and see the latest whiz bang, you know, extension for their store and all that kind of stuff. And then they look at they get the conversion rates and say, oh, look, the conversion rates moved. The first thing you need to check was that on a site like yours? Were they selling their own product or were they selling someone else's product? Because it's like different. It's very different horses for courses in terms of what's going to work and what's not going to work. So it's like, certainly this is probably the biggest one size fits all doesn't apply to e-commerce.
This is a huge one, and nobody seems to talk about this in e-commerce strategy. It's the biggest question.
The first thing is the desirability. The desirability, if you are selling someone else's product, that should have been done for you. It's almost like outsourcing that. So let's say you're selling Apple computers. You know, you don't have to create the desirability for Apple computers. Apple have done that for yourself. So that's the benefit, is that you can go out there and there's traffic, people looking for that already. So, but the downside is that everybody else can do that as well. They can come and sell that product. So if you're selling your own product, You can't outsource the desirability. It's your product, your brand. You have to create the desirability.
So
because of that, what you need to communicate on the landing pages is going to be different, because people already know about it if it's something like that.
I think that's right. The fundamental difference. If it's your own brand, you will tend to have a higher margin, but the downside is you'll have no desirability because no one knows who you are, and you'll have no natural traffic.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have to create the desirability, you'll have to create the traffic, and you'll have to create the desirability. But the upshot is you should have a higher margin and you should have a more loyal customer because they're buying from you. They're buying into your brand. So that is great, and obviously then your business becomes worth more and you're off onto a journey. However, on the flip side, if you're selling other people's products, you'll have a lower margin, which is the negative side of it, but you'll have the desirability is almost completely irrelevant. It's not quite, but it is, like Mark was saying, the desirability is almost there, and you'll have traffic that already exists. So people will already be searching for Apple computers or... Well, it's getting really windy. What are you doing?
I know, sorry. I'll put myself on mute while she's talking.
Please, let's go. Okay.
How do I do
right,
that?
Right, well, you find somewhere quiet. So, you know, the desirability is almost irrelevant, but the traffic is already there. So if someone is Googling, you know, Panasonic, you know, model 123 TV, you know, you can come up for that search. And if you've got the two fundamental things, which is price and availability, so, you know, you can then start to scale. But of course, it's easier to copy. And obviously, you've only got a certain number of things you can pull. So that's the fundamental difference. So your own brand, you've got higher margin, you've got no desirability off the bat, you've got no traffic. If it's your other people's brand, you've got a lower margin, desirability, you don't have to, doesn't really care, doesn't matter because it's done, and there's traffic ready for you. Now,
I think that what would be interesting to say would be like the worst case scenario of both ends. Like, say you're selling someone else's products. The worst case scenario would be where nobody knows what they are. So that basically you have to create the desirability for those products and you have to sell them. And then once you've built the desirability off, they might be able to take it off you. So that would be the, you know, they basically go, oh, thank you for building a market in the UK for this, our product. Oh, we're now going to go and sell it direct. So that would be the worst case scenario. And then I guess the worst case scenario, the other one is it's hard to, if you have your own brand, there's no really worst case scenario, is there? Because you're building
the worst case
desirability.
It's how competitive, you know, if you're going, let's say you create a brand selling, I don't know, shirts or something like that. You know, you have to answer the question is you're stealing from other people. You know, you're growing by stealing market share. And you've got to answer the question, well, why would people buy from me? I mean, that's still the question on both brands. I think the difference that what you gain is, if it's your own brand, you gain the ability to change the pricing architecture and the offer architecture. You have that leverage. You know, you can set the price. You can decide what the offer architecture is. Whereas if it's other people's products, you can't set the price. You have to be there and thereabouts with price. And therefore, you lose that ability to really play with that offer architecture. I mean, ultimately, though, I mean, you know, it's so tight now that the margins are so much tighter that to scale with other people's products online is a lot harder than it was, because the margins are tighter and the competition is more fierce and the cost per click is more expensive. There's no such thing as free traffic anymore. So you're basically paying for traffic. And you're basically saying, well, why should I pay traffic to people to come and buy other people's brands? So it's a numbers game. But I think there's some interesting strategies. If you look at a couple of really good scenarios where people have really understood this. So if you're selling other people's products, the ultimate question you've got to answer is, why should people buy from me? So I'm going to assume that the price is there and thereabouts. And your stock, you know, is there. The availability is there and thereabouts. Then you've got to go, well, why should people buy from me? And I think two examples is quite good. It's AO.com and Lakeland are two examples I'm going to talk about, because what they did is they really understood the pain points and the anxieties that people go through. So AO.com have gone, well, what do people hate? Because they obviously sell other people's brands, white goods, fridges, and people hate it. They had to take a day off work to get the fridge to come, and then it would come, and it wouldn't actually arrive in the end. They'd take a day off work, or they'd say it's going to come at 9 to 10. It wouldn't come until 7 o'clock, and that's the only time they went out. It's so frustrating. So they did this thing where you can book an hour delivery slot, and they would take the old one away, and they just made it. They just took away the pain, you know. So that's why they've grown, because their customer service was amazing. And then Lakeland, who were selling kitchen gadgets, you know, on all the same sort of coffee machines, you know, Nespresso makers and, you know, Magimixers and all that kind of food processors and mixers and whisks and all that kind of thing. Everyone selling the same stuff. All had similar price, all had similar availability, but Lakeland said, well, we've got to give people a reason to buy from us. And they did the 3-year warranty and everyone else was doing a 2-year warranty. And that's why Lakeland did really well. And it's so obvious. Mm. You know,
so I think if you can go on
to buy from you.
Yeah, you can go and do a real big analysis in your market of what the anxieties are around buying that product. So you can go on to Amazon, you can just pull off all the reviews, you can find the key anxieties, and then you'll find something. They say, well, when people are buying a mattress, for example, one of the pains that they have is getting rid of the old mattress. It's like, well, how do you do it? You've got to take it to the skip and all that kind of stuff. And if you do that, then there's going to be slightly less price pressure on people who are having a massive, anxiety-reducing offer on that landing page. And also, same thing with returns as well. If returns is a big deal, then that's going to help you get forward as well.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think the biggest drivers of it really is price and availability. And I think what's interesting is how, you know, we've got a client that sells other people's products, but they've got 150 stores nationwide and they do click and collect. And 70% of their orders are click and collect. And, you know, that's because their availability is better. So you can go and get it within an hour. And that's how that's working well. As an instant offer. But obviously that's not relevant for a lot of people. But it is ultimately about the price and availability. And I think what's quite interesting is how I'm reading my scribbled notes in front of me, but essentially if you're selling other people's brands, one technique that we've seen working quite well is that you lead with obviously a well-known brand of product people are searching for, but then when they get to the site, you've got a very good average order value upsell strategy in place that you're then bundling things in together. So you might be selling something like, a speaker, a Sonos speaker, and that you can then sell with it, the carry case or the wires that go with it. And all of a sudden, you know, everyone on Google Shopping is competing for that Sonos speaker for £360 because it's pretty much a fixed price. But you've got a very good bundle upsell deal that is your own brand of, you know, carry case that goes with it, whatever it might be. And all of a sudden, you're then going after, not a £360 purchase, but a £420 purchase. Which, of course, means you're playing for a much bigger piece of the cake, which means you can go and spend a bit more on Google Shopping because it still works, whereas no one else will be able to. If you can increase the average order value, that's great. And if you can bring in your own brand at that point, that's even better. Like, you know, the accessory that goes with it could be your own that you've got better margin on. And you can also play with the offer architecture with that too. Because what are you going to do with an offer architecture? If you're selling one Sonos speaker, well, you can't do something stupid with a discount because you haven't got the margin to play with. You know, everyone else has got it available anyway. So you have to then add something else in. Yeah, you can do a better warranty, but you can also do like a free gift with it as well.
It reminds me of someone we're working with on the on the mentoring side. So he sells diabetic products, and he can recruit on other people's product, which is like the glucose meters and the test strips and all that kind of stuff. And so they're buying those. He knows what price they've got to have on. And then when they come onto his house file and his email list, he can then upsell them his own brand products, which is our stickers and things like that that go onto those things. So the other people's products become the recruitment vehicle, which he doesn't necessarily need to make as much money on because he knows that after that, he's got all these other products that he can sell to those people because he knows that they are diabetics. Yeah. And so therefore, that's going to really, really work really well. So, you know, you need to have that side of the business. You need to have the both sides of the business. So if you are recruiting these people who are buying that product, what can you then sell them that can be your back end of your business that will make all the money? Because if that's the case, then you can recruit all day long on that product, and your upsells can be where your margin is and where your profit is, and then you can go and get your back end. So let's say you're selling like some high end electronic product. You know, maybe there's a service or an installation service or something where you actually make your money, and the product that you buy is something that is almost like not a loss leader, but it scratches its own back, and it's your driver. So that you're not really paying anything to sell that to them, but you know you're going to get on average this amount of money out of that transaction and that amount of money out of that person over the lifetime. So it becomes about maths. And and that's actually quite a nice moat in a business, because if someone else starts trying to sell that exact same electronic and haven't got all those things set up and haven't got those average order values set up and haven't got those services, they'll no way be able to compete with you, because they won't have been able to set up that infrastructure to be able to go and sell that product for that low price. And therefore it becomes a moat, it becomes a business. And I say moats, like Warren Buffett always talks about the moat around the business, which he wants to buy into a business that has a large moat, and building that back end of the business will be the moat that will be something that other people won't be able to recreate very, very quickly.
Well, so that's what the retail, that's what the high street have done for very well. If you went, went into Currys or Dixon's or PC World, they're trying to sell you the insurance for the TV or the computer, or the antivirus thing that went with it. And that's where they made the money.
Yeah.
That's where the margin was. I mean, we had a client selling safes and they made alarm and security products, and they made the money on the safe installation or removing the old safe.
Yeah.
So that's where the margin was. And it was so profitable. And they really pushed that. So all of a sudden, everyone else is selling that Chubb model XYZ safe for £200, which they were as well. But none of the other businesses had this really slick upsell mechanism that took them through this project. They had two steps in the checkout, two separate stages in the checkout that pushed the upsell. We had it on the product page. We had it on the ad to basket event. We had it on the basket itself. We had it in the checkout on step one and two. And then again, before they pressed the button, we had it another step. And then we had it on a post-purchase email. We took that £200 and it went into, all of a sudden it became a £250, which was basically free. That £50 was, almost 100% profitable. So it was just a game changer. It had the equivalent of making an own, someone else's product that was maybe a 25% margin. It all of a sudden made it into a massively more profitable sale, and no one else had it.
Yeah,
because they were just trying to flog that one thing.
Yeah, and then there's always upsells as well, isn't there? So, like, for example, if everybody does go for a safe and they get it installed and they get it in the house, it's probably quite likely that when they install the safe, they're probably doing something similar. There's a job to be done. If they're having a safe installed, the job is trying to make the house more secure. So therefore, during that job, and you go and install it, you go, oh, I notice you're also doing this. Would you like this product? Which could be something that's your own brand. So it's like using the other person's product to open the sales window and open the relationship with the customer to which you can sell something. And look at cars. When you buy a car, the accessories is where they make the money, isn't it? They go, you don't want to be destroying the carpets. You need to have these special carpets because blah, 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 blah. And they're rarely, sometimes they are. VW own brand, but sometimes they're not, and that is where they actually make a lot of their money, because the margin on the car is so tight. And
I think it's like, ultimately, if you can create your own brand and you can really scale with that, I think ultimately the rewards are probably bigger in the end, because you've got the ability to control exactly where you want to take your brand. And the reward is typically a higher margin and a higher lifetime customer value, isn't it? But it's almost harder to get going. I mean, I think you could start, you could go into a new market and you can go and analyze, the electronics industry or TVs or whatever it might be. And you could go, well, I can buy them for that price and I can sell them for this price. And I reckon I can do £1 million quite easily. You probably can.
Yeah.
You know, but ultimately, you know, remember the two major equations is how much does it cost us to recruit a customer? And then the second thing is how much is that customer worth to us over a lifetime?
Yeah.
And you've always got that question. If the value is in the other people's products you're selling, is this customer just going to, are they loyal? Or are they just going to go wherever the hell they want, they can get that brand the cheapest and fastest?
Well, I think it's about how shops and retail in generally are having to work harder. I mean, you know, go back to when we were kids and shops, they would basically open up, they'd be local and they'd just plonk products on the shelves and that would be it. You know, which one do you want?
And that was availability. What they existed in the little town because it was the only place that had availability of certain stuff. So it would be, you know, your local electrician shop, you know, where you go and buy your TV. That's where you'd go because it was it had the availability. And now, of course, online's happened. It's completely changed that. And you can't just take your little, you know, shop in Wilmslow that's selling TVs and put that online and expect people to like, because it's like going into Trafford Centre, everyone's selling the same product as you. You've got to be a reason people should buy from you.
It comes down to the job to be done. So the shops retail nowadays need to be much more focused on the job to be done that the person's actually getting. So whereas the TV store was just the TV store where they had sold TVs, now the online experience is much more about what is that person trying to achieve? So if they're trying to achieve a home entertainment system in their house, that's the job you need to help them create from start to finish. You need to be able to help them choose it. You need to help them install it. You need to help them maintain it. You need to help them get the best from it. You know, so that when you're selling a product, you're not just selling the product, but maybe you're also selling an information product on how to set it up properly and maybe an installation, someone physically coming to install it for them. And then to be able to, like, maybe some way to check that it's actually working properly with some kind of measurement device, or, you know, like, it's like thinking about who those people who really care about making sure the job's to be done properly and making sure they actually get it done properly. So
we've got to come across, you know, credible, you know, as a specialist. You know, you're not just a box shifter.
No.
You know, you've really got to have great customer service. I mean, the journey is basically desirability / convincibility that you can sell them the product, you know, that you are the right company to buy from. You've got to have an amazing customer service that gets rid of all the pain points. And then you've got to give them a reason to buy from you. You have to do those three things.
And it's using the technology to do that customer service in an automated fashion as much as possible, so that that it's seamless for you. So you don't have to sit in your head and go, oh, so and so bought that telly the other day, and I should really be following up with him. And it's like that's done. You know, you've got a whole system for that. And if they do certain, you know, if they click a box on check an email to say they are needing help, then it goes your email sequence says, you know, if they've clicked that link, then it comes through to this person and they follow up. So it's all slickly done.
You know the stats that I often see that e-commerce businesses that predominantly sell other people's products, the stat that they often struggle with is the basket to order or the basket to check out. And that means that people will come onto the site, they'll add it to the basket, and then they leave it in the basket and they go back into Google to try to find it cheaper or faster. And that typically, so you end up with, you know, the typical scenario, add to basket should be, you know, this is a great, perfect case scenario. Add to basket should be 10%, basket checkout 55%, checkout to order 85%. Whereas we often find that the businesses who are selling other people's products struggle with a basket to checkout stat. So it should be like 55%. It tends to be around 30% because people leave it like a dumping ground and they're trying to find it. So that's when you've got to really take away those anxieties. Obviously, they're going to go and find it cheap. They're going to try and find it cheap. Of course they are. Of course they're going to go and find it because they know that they can buy this thing from anywhere. Of course, but go and find it cheaper.
What was
you're
interesting?
Trying to get a good deal.
I was looking at a site yesterday. It's one of our big sites, And I was looking at the basket to check out stat, and it was lower than normal, obviously because of COVID and all that kind of stuff. And so I was like, well, that's, people are leaving on that page more than normal. And then I went to have a look at the live chat stats, and I was like, there's 8,000 live chat requests, and only 197 of those have been answered. And when they're answered, the page value doubles, so that the revenue per person doubles. So think about those 8,000 people, like of those, the majority of those people aren't getting answered by live chat. And therefore, you know, it becomes obvious if you dig into the stats. Look, if we put more resource onto the basket page for live chat, we're going to get more orders. It's that simple. Because suddenly you start thinking, well, if I have someone there actually responding, I'm going to double my average order value per the site, then that's a no-brainer. And that might be the reason why someone buys from you, because they've had a relationship with someone and they're confident that you know what they're asking about and you've got the exact one they want. And just having a physical conversation with somebody in terms of live chat, it might be the reason why they buy, because they might go, I'm not sure if it's quite the same model as the other ones. And I just wanted to know if it was that latest stock model, the one that's got that whiz bang thing on the back of it. And he says, yes, it is. And we've got it in stock and I can get it to you by tomorrow. And just having that confirmation that with a real person could be the reason why you get the sale. And a lot of the time I talk to people about live chat and they go, oh, well, we haven't got the resource and stuff. And I bet you at a lot of those shops of this person I'm talking about, I bet there's a lot of people sitting there in those shops twiddling their thumbs, doing nothing, that could be
well.
Answering
if you could see how
chat.
Much money you make, I mean, you know, it you know, trebles conversion rate. I mean, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, and also, as soon as you start getting into live chat, what we always say, as soon as you start talking to your customers, the true picture emerges of what's going wrong. And then you go and talk to your live chat team, and you go, yeah, well, every day I'm having conversations about people and say they can't find the add to basket button, and it's like, okay, let's go and move the add to basket button to make it more obvious. Or everybody's asking for Klarna and we're not offering it. It's like, well, let's go and add Klarna. You know, as soon as you start talking to customers, it's like having a physical shop.
Finding out.
It's like if you had a physical shop, you'd know exactly what was wrong straight away. With an online shop, you can have a problem go unnoticed for years until you suddenly start talking to your customers. So that if you're selling other people's products, that's essential. Because it's those little things, those little anxieties that will part from price. Yeah.
It's that Garden Buildings Direct story that I love.
Mm.
My favorite story, isn't it? You know, when you're buying, and you know, you're selling sheds online and everyone's selling the same shed. And there's, you know, five or six suppliers, they're all selling the same shed, same price.
Mm.
But Garden Buildings Direct say 10-year anti-rust galvanized nails, and everyone else is just saying nails. They're all the same nails. They all come from the same supplier, but because they've gone deeper into the anxiety and pain that people have, you know, all of a sudden you're putting that seed of doubt in people's heads, and it goes, oh well, I don't want my nails to rust.
Yeah,
no, God, I can't possibly. I have to buy it now from Garden Buildings Direct because they've got 10-year anti-rust galvanized nails. So just get it's working out what that pain is and agitating it and pushing it.
I've actually done that.
Bring
with,
it out.
Cookware. So there was a cookware manufacturer, and I'm actually selling it directly for them. And then there's a lot of other people that are selling it online for other people. So what I did is I said in my ads, I said, make sure you're getting the like 2020 stock. Make sure you get the latest stock, indicating that there was a slight difference in the new stock. And I knew that when they came to my website, I'm the only one out there saying that this is 2020 stock. So that everybody else is just saying, oh, this is this pan and blah, 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 blah. And I've created that seed of doubt that that something is different in the 2020 stock that's not that could be that has only just come out, and therefore they want this new one. And so therefore, if I'm the only person stating that I've got 2020 stock on my product page, there are people who are going to go, well, I want to get the 2020 stock because
of
this new thing.
And that example is actually it's a brand who is selling online themselves, but has also got resellers selling online competing against them. And we're trying to convince people to buy from the official website. And obviously we're saying, well, what we basically sat on the table and said, what can we use to get people to buy from us? You know, extended warranty. Well, we can't do price because that's going to really pee off our, you know, whole reseller network. Everyone's going to go and jump up and down. If we do offers and do, they're going to freak out. So what else have we got? We've got warranties. We've got free gift. We've got availability. We've got faster dispatch times. And we've got the seed of doubt around the latest 2020 model.
Well, if you go, I mean, it reminds me of when we were looking at, you know, Arga cookers, and we were looking at how they were sold in America. And obviously Arga cookers, they set the price of you must charge this amount for Arga cook. You can't go lower than that. But then the people in America, they were like giving away free fridges and free, like, so the deal was basically who was giving away the most free stuff with it that put around the deal to make people go through them, because the margin on the Arga cookers was, you know, decent. So it was people were playing around with that to make sure they got the sale. So it was building the old package, like the Arga.
Well, basically, fundamentally, the fundamental thing is, why should I buy from you? You know, it's the market square test. It's so applicable here.
Yeah.
You know, no one cares about you.
No.
No one cares. They want the deal.
It's the hardest thing, I think. I think people who go into online and start online, that becomes a lot obvious. I think that it's the people we've seen struggle the most with it is people who've come from traditional retail. That's what they've done all the time. Then they start going online and they go, well, why can't I sell it for the same price that I've got it in the store? And unfortunately, some of those people have gone bankrupt, because it is about, fundamentally, it's about price and availability. And then your business is not actually selling that product. It's about selling the other stuff to make it work. And if you're just selling the product and that's all you've got, you're going to struggle if you've got no back end to kind of make money out of it. If someone else has, if you're going head to head, say if I'm selling, you know, you're selling a garden chair and I'm selling a garden chair, and you, Ian, you've got an upsell to the garden chair, and you've got a table, and you've got something that goes with it, and you've got an installation thing, and I haven't, and you're making another 200 quid on your accessories, and I'm not, I'm going to lose out, because I can't sell that chair as cheaply as you, because you're just going to go and say, yeah, well, actually, I can even drop 20% off.
I know. And you probably the one who has not got the upsells and hasn't thought about any lifetime customer value will be looking at that customer going, how can they afford to sell it at that price? That's just unbelievable. I don't know how they're doing it. And it will be because they've thought about the upsells, the bundle deals, the lifetime customer value, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
You've got to really, really get into that.
Yeah. Because I'll know that someone comes and buys that chair, that they've actually got all those other stuff for the garden stuff. And on average, that person comes and buys £1,000 worth of stuff for them over the thing, because their customer service is so good, they're going to go and get by the other stuff. So they go, I just want to get people on the house file. I don't even mind paying a little bit to get them on it, because I know that they're going to go and buy that stuff. So, you know, that's the game you're in. And it comes down to the maths, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. So what's that summary? Let's just summarize that. I'm going to summarize it very briefly. Okay. So, or we can tell me, you can cut this bit out, Mark, if you don't, if I'm rambling.
No, but make it good.
Go.
Because I know I'm not one for editing.
No, our father will judge us on the podcast as well. So he'll tell us if it's good enough. Good. So basically, if it's your brand, you've got greater margin, but you've got no desirability of product yet, and you have no traffic, but you have a better lifetime customer value theoretically. And ultimately, that's your moat. Your moat is your brand, because no one can buy it from anywhere else. There's other people's brands, your margin's lower, but you have ready-made traffic. Desirability is already done for you, but your lifetime customer value might be in trouble. And unless you have an AOV boosting mechanism, you're going to really struggle to scale. Yeah.
Or you have a back end. You have a back end that you can sell all the products.
Yeah,
to that,
with lifetime customer value and that kind of stuff, and a bundle upselling, that kind of stuff. Totally. You've got to really, really focus on the questions. Why should people buy from you? Especially if you're selling other people's brands. AO.com, yeah. Late Cullen Do Good at Good. Fundamentally, it comes down to price and availability as a basic, and then you've got to go from there. And you can also bring in your own brand to do the upselling that you've got better margin on. Mm. And obviously think about service add-ons. That's basically it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. It's
all
probably good
loads
stuff.
Of other things that we'll think about. But then, let's leave that. We'll do that as a phase one.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. If you haven't got the book yet, go and grab it. It's at www.ecommercebook.co.uk. That'll get you onto the email list as well, and you'll be getting all the updates to the podcast and all that kind of stuff. So if you've not got into the community yet, please do. We also add you to the Facebook group as well, which is part of the group, so we go and post the updated podcast in there as well. And so get started with us, and we'll speak to you next time.
Okay, bye guys. Bye.